What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic. Welcome to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, even though Africa has been trying to distance itself from the persistent perception that it is a conflict-ridden continent looking to catch up with the rest of the world in creating opportunities for growth and investment, and of course, quality of life for their people, there are visible signs that in some parts of Africa, we're still a long way off. There are, in fact, many places where fighting continues. In these countries, they are fighting out old conflict. And in some places, new conflicts have just broken out. In countries like the Central African Republic, South Sudan, a new country, to Mali, fighting and other forms of violence continue to disrupt societies and create great suffering for thousands of people. The question we want to explore on today's show is why these conflicts persist and whether we are prescribing the wrong solutions because we paint often all the conflicts with the same brush. That is, we don't take time to understand the complexities and nuances of these conflicts. There is an argument that Africa observers and analysts continue to fail in pointing out the real root cause of any particular conflict. The reason is that they fall back on the same old worn-out narratives of a continent that is plagued by tribal conflict. That's not to say that there are no tribal dimensions to some of these conflicts. It is just that the root causes often lie somewhere else, most likely in some form of a political struggle for power or resources. The struggle just manifests itself differently because politicians use their tribal affiliations to exploit the people. The concern is that by calling these conflicts tribal, ultimately those in power to influence any change will come in with the wrong solutions. So let's talk today on Upfront. Do you believe that we still have tribal conflicts on the continent? How do they manifest themselves? And how do they impede on the development of the continent? This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Now greetings to the world. The accumulative intelligence of mankind is what makes us special amongst all other species.
One of the biggest dangers of tribalism is that it causes a very big gap in development. Why? Because there is no way we can work together as brothers and sisters in so many things concerning development when there is that huge gap between us, when you have our tribalistic undresolved issues. So we realize I can't put something on table when I exactly know that the other pattern, the other side is not of my same tribe, and when I know that there is something negative they speak concerning my tribe.
How do we avoid conflict in Africa? Is that possible? Okay, here's an idealistic scenario. Perhaps we can eradicate conflict if we can completely eradicate poverty. I mean, things like food, shelter, education, water, and health should not be things that people worry about. Put a system in place to take care of people who are down on their luck. But in Africa, the Africa I live in right now, pardon my pessimism, but conflict can never be avoided.
Thank you. I'm Tony Garang for Red Army. That's Red Army of South Sudan. If we people in Africa would have to come up with common agenda of reconciliation. If we focus and say Africa should reconcile, peace of South Sudan and South Sudan government and the rebel, what is first now is the money. And that's why you see people are rushing to Addis Ababa. You rush there to that venue, you get money. But will peace come? No, there is no peace. They are looking for their benefit.
Deserve to burn. Tribal war. geographically they moved us from Africa. We was once happiness pursuers, now we backstabbing, combative and abusive. The African and Arab are at it, they most Muslim. We should be moving in unison, disputes to end.
Bounty when you interact with different people and listen to how people categorize groups, they attach stereotypes according to tribes, you know. When people want to win the political power, come in to use, you know, the stereotypes around to gain, you know, ground and support from others.
It's a very common issue. I think it's either way. For some cases it falls under politics, and for some cases it really doesn't fall into that category. Yeah, it's really to do with politics when some kind of politicians try to attach themselves to their tribal affiliation just for the sake of winning the majorities. It's a really dangerous practice because it retards the development in the area. You find that people are pulling resources to themselves and not to the good of everyone.
I think tribalism is bigger than political power, because under tribalism, like I say, you have homesteads actually believing in the concept of tribe. So it's not actually political activists or politicians drumming it up. They just use tribalism as a vehicle to achieve their end
against the nation, the me and my fam against the clan, the me and my brother with no hesitation, go against the fam until they cave in. Now who's left in this deadly equation? That's right, it's me against my brother. Then we point a Kalashnikov and kill one another.
Upfront on the Voice of America, thank you for joining us. If you've just tuned in on the show today, we're talking about the root causes of some of the conflicts on the continent. We're trying to challenge the misconception that many of the conflicts on the continent are tribal. This is in fact not the case. The truth is that social conflict and political violence in Africa is a complex subject, and it will be useful to have a better understanding of the root causes if change is going to happen. Now, contrary to some of the images of violence and famine that tend to characterize Western imaginations about Africa, violent civil conflict is not that common in Africa. We are a continent of 54 nations, many of which exist in relative peace.
Nadia, in the past 50 years, the continent has been home to many types of conflicts. These range from wars of decolonizations. Remember in the 50s, the Mau Mau in Kenya. We had secessionist struggles. We remember the Biafra War in Nigeria. We've had coup d'etats, multiple coup d'etats, and many others. You know, I'm not even mentioning the clashes that exist among political parties in many of these new democracies. So in the studio with me, I have four young fellows who are part of the Young African Leaders Initiative, which is also known as the Mandela Washington Fellows. They represent four countries. Chedi is from Tanzania, Chipi is from Malawi, Cyrus is from Uganda, and Laura is from Togo. So we had an interesting conversation on some of the causes of conflict on the continent. Chipi, first of all, you're from Malawi, right?
Sure.
The country has not known any conflict, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah,
right.
At least we haven't had
Malawi is synonymous with peace in Africa. It's one of the few countries that has actually relatively been able to maintain peace in their country. Mm-hmm. Why has that been possible?
That's one of the reasons it's called the warm heart of Africa. Well, I think that, before I go to that question, I just wanted to comment on the first question, that my view of conflict is that I don't think that we can come to a position of being able to point at a single factor as a source of conflict, because obviously there are so many reasons for it. But when we go down to the deeper roots of it, I think that it is just as a result of the human nature. It's just human nature that you have that inner conflict within yourself as a person, and you are dealing with 7 billion people in the world, and therefore it's actually inevitable, you know.
Wait, so your inner conflict manifests itself by the way you interact or deal with society
by
outside?
You interacting and just being with other people. And mind you, these are people from different religious background, and these are people from different ethnic groups and social settings. So
right,
pretty much everything about you and them is different. That's
right.
Why you have conflict in families, even, So before it actually manifests itself in
on a societal level, it is internal. That's that's very interesting. I've never had anybody put it that way.
That's why I keep thinking that even when we are talking about, for example, resolving conflict and making sure that it's not there, I don't think we'll come to a point where we say we have been able to resolve a conflict. I think that conflict is something that we can basically just manage, but not deal with it, but not overcome, because it's in us as humans. It's within.
It's inherent. No, Malawians don't have internal conflict.
We do have conflicts. We do have. I mean, we've seen people going on the streets demonstrating. They're unhappy about the government, about certain things, but we haven't had conflict to that that intense conflict that you that can actually lead to civil war or something like that. Like maybe a lot of countries. So relatively, yes, we are a very peaceful country and we do enjoy our peace and love it. I think that Malawians are just tolerant people, and we have just been taught to be able to negotiate and just understand
and resolve and whatever. Cyrus, I'm going to bring you in the conversation here. You come from Uganda, relatively peaceful for the last 26 years. Obviously, pockets of conflict here and there. And what has been the role in young people in maintaining the peace that we've seen in the last 26 years?
I think because one to say is that the young people are starting to see things from a much broader perspective. To go back to Chedi and then come through to Chipi and then to me, it's both external and internal. One, I feel conflicts obviously show up because of fighting for resources. But then if you say in the case, like let's say just for the case of Rwanda, what was also driven by external forces was also powered up by internal forces. Because, look, if somebody comes from elsewhere and tells you that, look, you people are better than these people, and you're in some form of brotherhood, why would you pick up on the belief that if we're both from the same country and we're different tribes, somehow you are better than me? So I feel like... Why should somebody else tell us? So I feel, one, it's been a lot of external forces for an African continent in terms of going back to the colonial days, like Chedi says. I mean, it's something that has developed, I think, as a form of a negative force even within our own people. So one way I think of also dealing with that conflict is trying to understand who we are and the unity that we hold as African people. And being a part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship, it's one of the things that it has taught me, that we need to see ourselves as Africans.
Right.
The moment we start to see ourselves as Africans and we'll start to deal with things like that, then there's less conflict. You know, that inner serenity that Chipi talks about is...
The Malawian thing.
Exactly. It's very important, because personally, if you're not stabilized as a person, then the outer world seems to fall into that instability.
Now, it's very interesting you say that we need to see the common strains of our humanity before, as Africans. But some people will say, well, we need to start on a very communal level. You know, we need to see the people, my neighbor, as the same person as myself. Are we there yet as a continent to start looking at ourselves, you know, under the same umbrella?
To be a bit frank, I feel now at this point in the world, we're starting to move in that direction. And I think that's why certain things have started to happen to us, like the fellowship. We've never had a fellowship like this before, where they bring 500 Africans from different parts of the continent. And then we get to stay together at universities. Then all of a sudden, you now start to have a friend from another country. So it starts to create this whole thing that, look, we're actually not different. I mean, now my closest friend is from Malawi, Chipi, you know, I'm with her here today. Mm. Or Lola, or Chedi, we're all from different countries. But you can see that now we're starting to share certain spaces together and are starting to understand the essence of that. And if it continues to grow, we will get to that level where we can probably just understand each other.
So guys, I'm going to stop you right here, but we'll be back. We're just going to take a quick short break and we'll be back to discuss further this issue of conflict in Africa.
Thank you.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C. Nadia Sam is in Johannesburg, South Africa. We are talking about some of the root causes of conflict in Africa and whether it has to do with tribes, with politics, with resources, and how we sometimes prescribe the wrong solutions to some of the underlying causes of conflict. And in the studio with me, I have four young African leaders, part of the Young African Leaders Initiative, who are still here in Washington, D.C. And we hope to be, you know, talking to them in our future shows about different issues that we cover here on Upfront. But we have Chedi from Tanzania, and we have Chippy from Malawi, Cyrus is from Uganda, and Laura is from Togo. And we are continuing on this discussion about some of the causes of conflict, how we look at how we deal with conflict in our communities, in our societies, and why some countries like Malawi and Tanzania, which are represented right here in the studio by these two young fellows, have been relatively peaceful in the past 50 years after independence. Lola, can you relate to us the Togolese experience in terms of conflict? How have you guys dealt with conflict in the past couple of decades?
Before going to the Togolese experience, let me talk about the conflict that we have in the West Africa now, because there is a lot of conflict here there. Like if you take the example of Mali, this is a matter of religion and the Muslim extremism in the area. But for me, as my fellow said it before, it's a matter of comprehension that we have to know who we are. Like, we are not different. Mm. If you are a Christian or you are a Muslim, you don't have to feel that saying that, okay, I'm better than you because I'm a Christian, or I'm better than you because I'm a Muslim. No.
Is your generation seeing conflict differently? Are you dealing with conflict differently?
I think before looking into how we deal with conflicts, it's important to understand what actually causes conflict. Yeah, and if I could start from there, I think what stands out to me the most is issue of controlling resources.
Right,
and we this is not a new phenomenon. It has started, you know, since history. Yeah, we started with colonialism.
Right,
then after colonialism, we went into
with the introduction of the money economy into African societies.
Yeah.
There was a need to hold resources.
Exactly. Right. So in the beginning, we saw Western countries coming to Africa and kind of like, you know, engineering a lot of conflicts to as their way in. And then, you know, so with this one of the latest examples you could cite is the issue of the conflict of Rwanda, where you have tribal conflict that led to genocides. Yeah, some European countries have been cited to be instigating or be behind people behind that kind of conflict. But we also see, you know, the same issue of controlling resources moving forward into post-independence Africa, where you have political issues, you have tribal issues. But basically, all this, what they're trying to do is to be the ones that are in control of resources.
So then the question again is, is your generation looking at conflict or dealing with conflict differently?
Absolutely. I think, and with this one, I will speak specifically from the Tanzanian perspective. So number one, we also stand out the most as one of the most peaceful African countries.
Right, you and Malawi?
African countries.
That's why you sat next to each other.
Malawi. Oh, yeah. we almost went to war, but because we're both peaceful, you can see we have been negotiating for over 40 years.
Right, you're negotiators.
Over 70 years now,
that's,
you know,
interesting.
on the lake.
What I've seen throughout the history of Tanzania, number one, is basically, again, start with history, because as soon as we became independent, what President Nyerere did was uniting all of Tanzanians, yeah, through Kiswahili and through exchange programs like the National Service. He made sure that, you know, the entire community of Tanzania, which, by the way, is 133 different tribes, yeah, are speaking the same language and coming together, working together. So with that, I think my generation is no longer to a big extent, say, as my father's generation, biased towards things like tribalism, biased by, you know, where you're from or where you grew up. You know, I think we are past that. So we see a lot of discussions along the political sphere, which now is more of a policy issues. Yeah, like which policy, which party is governing better than the other.
Right.
So we're no longer about, you know, okay, you're a Chaga, you're a Pare, therefore you're good, you're bad, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, that's a huge step towards, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just to add on to Chedi, he's actually right. When he brings the thing of Tanzania, I really now see the picture, because you can see that Uganda and Kenya struggling from the same thing. It always feels like that most of these conflicts are built because people feel that maybe this tribe is in power.
And they've been left out.
And then it's funny that when a particular tribe is in power, another particular tribe is losing out. So then we can't
all win.
Exactly. It becomes, and it's happening both in Uganda actually and Tanzania. I mean, and in Kenya, you can actually see it now.
But so how much of it has to do with resources? Laura, how much of these conflicts have to do with resources? Let's say people from the north have been governing your country, Togo, for so many years, for about a couple of decades now. What does that mean in terms of resource allocation, and how does that affect how the dynamics of interaction among the people?
Yeah, I think that... for the conflict, it have to be important that the one who is in power have to be fair to everyone. Like, it doesn't matter that you are from another country, I mean, another tribes or whatever. But if you share the resources equally among everyone, then they won't even feel that, okay, it's because you are from that particular tribe, that's why you are acting like that. Mm-hmm. So it's bring peace in the country. So for me, it's important, and it's a matter of democracy. This is what we call democracy, that everyone have to be in the same level, you know. So as you have asked the question, for me, it's important that the person who is in power have to be fair to everyone.
Now, for countries that have so many tribes, she's saying you have to have a sense that everybody is the same, is on the same level. That means sharing the national cake equally. That sometimes is really hard because, like Cyrus referred to this, one tribe is in power, the other tribe always feels that they're losing out. How do you balance the two? How do you make it that people all feel that they have an ownership, a stake in the destiny of the country?
I feel that it's very obvious that when people are in power, there's certain things that you see. So one, you need to learn how to... As a leader, I think you have to see your country as a country, not as individual people. So you've got to create a platform whereby everybody can get an opportunity. As long as they're good enough in what they're doing, then they deserve to be an opportunity. But for my country, there's so many cases where you look at it and see that very many people are in some positions that they are not even qualified for. And once people start to see that, then they start to get those sentiments of being left out as a tribe, then you start to build conflict.
Malawi, yeah, obviously been peaceful, like you've been trumpeting it as the heart of Africa, the warm heart of Africa.
Yeah.
But the sudden cracks have been appearing a couple of in the past couple of years. You've been watching the politics in Malawi of late. Something is simmering within Malawi.
Well, not exactly, but I think it's related to something that Lola mentioned. I'm glad that she mentioned something about democracy, because after democracy, that's when you see people understanding their rights and actually getting to a point where they know that they do have rights. They know that they can actually go on the streets to demonstrate. They know that they can actually demand those rights. They know that they can hold their leaders accountable, which is something we could not do before when we were under one-party system of government. So now with democracy and a lot of political parties and a lot of freedoms and rights, people understand that if a leader is not doing well, we can actually hold him accountable and actually demand for our rights and actually demand for fairness in when you're talking about job creation, employment, and several other opportunities that are available in the country, which takes us back to leadership, that this is all about a leadership issue.
Intelligent revolution must be African education. We want a revolution. I know we got together, yeah.
the black people redemption.
So one of the places that is currently experiencing a conflict or war that is affecting hundreds, if not thousands, of lives is South Sudan, a relatively new country that recently attained independence. But things have not been going very well. And because of political differences between the leadership, a war has broken out and it's affecting thousands of lives of people. So, and the two people that I've actually been following closely this this conflict and covering it for the media are my two colleagues, Henok Fente and John Tanza Mabusu, our editor of the Sudan In Focus show here at Voice of America. Henok Fente is with the Horn of Africa. I brought them in to look at some of the causes of such conflicts on the continent.
How would you characterize the conflict in South Sudan?
It's a political crisis that resulted from lack of democracy from the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement. Now, the sad thing is that the military fragmented on tribal lines, and hence the international community could not distinguish between political crisis and tribal conflict, and hence they started calling it a tribal conflict. But the reality on the ground is that it's a political crisis. Now, if you say this is a tribal conflict, the people who are loyal to either President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar are not all Nuer and Denka only. Riek Machar has someone like Rebecca Garang behind him, and Rebecca is a Denka. Salva Kiir has people like James Waniga, and James Waniga is not a Denka. He's from Equatoria. So when you say it's really tribal, I see that as an oversimplifying of the issue.
But you just say that initially when the crisis started, that the army fragmented along tribal line.
Of course, the army did. But, you know, that is not to say it's a tribal conflict. And the army fragmented because there is no professional army in South Sudan. A lot of experts have looked at the SPLA and they say it does not meet the standard of a professional army.
Henok, why is it on the surface that it came out as a tribal conflict?
There is a truth to the fact that this could be an ethnic conflict, really. I agree with what John is saying when he says the root cause is political conflict. And usually, if you take a look at what's going on in many African countries, the root cause is political, but it manifests itself in a different form, which is the political leaders are looking for a way that they can garner support for their political ideas and their political rifts, and they try to galvanize support along ethnic lines. So that is just the immediate way of manifestation.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank our Mandela Washington Fellows for the insightful discussion that we had on the show today. If you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.